Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is up? My name is Curtis, and I am just your typical Spike. Here with me is my finance guy and good buddy, Dustin. Dustin, how are you, sir?
I'm doing all right.
He's all right. Cameron, you all right?
I'm fine, yes.
Oh, listen to this guy and his highbrow.
That's right.
Humor. Cameron's our producer in MTG Yellow Belt. We've got another show here for you that is just packed with spoilers and our own tournament reports, and we're going to have Cameron become a Spike. There's so much going on.
So can you just picture Cameron like swirling a glass of red wine going, I'm fine.
Well, that's pretty much, you know, what he does. He's
like every day, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know where you buy all your hipster clothing, Cameron. Is this
The Gap.
The Gap. It's all, he wears all the Gap stuff. He's got some wine. He's ready to go, as it were. Where Dust and I, we're blue collar to the core, man.
Yeah.
That's right.
Right. Anyway, I don't even know what that means, right?
America.
America. I'm feeling very patriotic, right? So let's get some Bruce Springsteen in the background. Let's talk about Magic the Gathering. Cameron.
Yeah.
You played some Modern, right? Let's hear about it.
Yeah, so Friday night was canceled because it was 4th of July, and so they moved Modern over to Saturday, and instead of getting card prizes this week, it was
you got firecrackers.
Yeah, I wish. It was cash prize, which was really, really awesome. So I suited up the blue-red Delver deck, and this is like a fully assembled blue-red Delver. I mean, everything that I want is in it right now, and it's a pretty decent deck. A couple of shows ago, Curtis, you talked, and I hate to admit when you're right or to stroke your ego in any sort of way.
Go on.
But you talked about the where you saw like the top Modern decks. Here were the tier ones. Here were the tier twos, and you put the Delver deck and said that it is very competitive against all of the tier one decks, and it can be really miserable against all the tier two decks. And that's how the game or my night really kind of shaped up and how it went. So I played Affinity for the first game matchup. And when I played Merfolk against this same Affinity player, it was a miserable matchup. I mean, I could never get my Merfolk to go off, right?
Whereas, just not quick enough.
Yeah, it's just not quick enough. Whereas with a blue-red Delver, granted he wasn't able to go off where he could get like, you know, his three Ornithopters and everything off at the exact same time. But I just had the right amount of counter magic, the right amount of just burn. I was playing Pillar of Flame. I was playing Electrolyze and I was playing, Lightning Bolts, and all of those, in combination with like those little 1/1 or 0/1 or whatever, robots just, I was able to just kind of eat him for lunch, turn on my Delver, turn on, you know, the six tokens I got from Young Pyromancer and won the game. Like, it was just an easy match, like straight up easy match. So yeah, I was surprised at how well the deck competed against what is probably one of the top three decks in Modern, I would say.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, that was round one. Round two, I went against Splinter Twin, and once again, this was a little bit tougher of a matchup. I had to go all three games, but I ended up eking by just like that. And there's really nothing interesting to say there. Round three, though, I played against a burn deck and just had a miserable time. Like when I'm at six life and he's just keeping the burn on, and he activates the Eidolon. Try to counter that one, take two damage. He, you know, has a second one ready to go, does it. And I have no way of countering that or lightning bolting or anything in order to play that. That Eidolon is so good in like every format right now for those burn decks.
Yeah. And it's really good against the blue red Delver deck, because the Modern version of blue red Delver deals itself a lot of damage over the course of the match. Yeah.
I mean, like, I was definitely being greedy with my Jatraxian probes. I mean, just, like, I had two in hand, and I just played them both so I could get Pyromancer tokens. but, yeah, I mean, that hurts myself in addition to, you know, fetch lands and then needing to shock myself in order to play a Steam Vents, you know. So that sort of thing. I was being greedy with my own life, but yeah, that's the way that matchup went. Round four was Affinity again, and kind of just walked over the guy, and he's one of the best players in the shop, and the deck just has a lot of answers for Affinity. So I went 3-1 and actually cashed in some prize money. I got $15, which I was really happy with. So
awesome.
Yeah. So that was Modern.
Sweet, dude. So like, especially in my experience playing Blue Red Delver here and there, is Electrolyze kind of, you know, tears apart Affinity. Like, it's a very hard card for them to deal with. A lot of times you're getting, you know, insane value, like three for one kind of value out of it.
And the most amazing part of that is, you know, he'll have like a Spellskite online. And since I have Electrolyze and I'm dealing I'm targeting two different people, the Spellskite doesn't actually trigger where he can pay to redirect both of those damage, so I can just hit both Ornithopters and then draw a card. It was just amazing.
Can we just say this? Because, Dustin, I know you know Spellskite's shot up in value, gosh, over the past, what, year?
Right.
It's like a $20 card now or something crazy.
Right.
I think it is the most overrated card in Modern. There are so many times I've seen that main deck when it has no business being main decked.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Drives me nuts. It's a great card out of the side, some of the matchups. It's fantastic. Just please, for everybody, don't main deck Spellskite.
I think the reason it's main decked is because you see so many twin decks and stuff.
Yeah, but correct me if I'm wrong. It does not stop Kikijiki, because Kikijiki's a thing you control. So,
right.
You know, that it shuts off, you know, a huge segment of the advantage of Splinter, or I'm sorry, of Spellskite. So,
right.
Yeah, I'm just not in love with that card, right? I'm playing control, and I'm seeing a lot of people put that like main deck in control decks, and I have a huge issue, right? But that's for another time, another talk, right? So, Cameron, closing thoughts on Modern. You have anything else? You just prized it, and you're a happy camper?
Yeah, I was happy camper. I'm sticking with Blue Red Delver for probably the upcoming, I guess, whatever, the Pro Tour circuit or whatever, the qualifiers,
PTQ.
I should say.
You are PTQs. Not on the Pro Tour. Let's
exactly.
just clarify that.
Yes, I am not at all and never will be.
He should be.
But
we should get a petition going together that says they should just invite him because.
There you go.
I mean, I'm really happy with Blue Red Delver. I may start dipping my toes into something else. I really like the blue black fairies. I kind of like a blue red fairies deck as well. I've seen that, and that's kind of interesting. So I don't know. I'll experiment with those and kind of play test with. But Blue Red Delver is definitely going to be my deck of choice.
So are you playing at the Modern Sunday event at Star City Games Kansas City? Or are you going to play Legacy? Have you made that decision?
I will probably play Modern just because I'll have a full deck suited up and ready to go.
And that'll be Blue Red Delver again?
It will be, yeah.
Okay, then. Hey, you know, if you want a foil Vendilion click for style points, I can help you out. Right? Yes,
don't do it.
You're 0.1% better. Right, through intimidation, yeah, when you play a card like that,
just like the blinding flash will just get them for that 1 second and I'll win.
There you go.
Yeah,
Dustin's like been nothing but disgusted. Dustin, I'm also waiting on you to ask him what he got with his prize money, because that's like your thing.
Well, it's $15. I didn't expect much, but let's do this. Cameron, what'd you get with your prize money?
So I made it store credit, and I'm going to be using it next week for standard. So just to
see, because it wasn't enough. He has to like tag on some from a different term anyway.
Fair enough.
Whatever.
Save up for a Force of Will, man.
There you go.
Yeah.
Treat it as a $15 discount on an expensive card, right?
There we go. I like that.
Nothing wrong with that.
As long as you're haggling for the discount in the first place, then slide in the fact that you got some store credit that they didn't remember.
Yes.
Like, yeah, discount. You know, Dustin comes up to every shop owner and he's like, hey, this is a nice shop. It would be a shame if something were to happen to it. You know what I'm saying?
That was the worst accent ever.
It was pretty bad. It was awesome.
Nobody said that I'm good with accents. So, hey, my week, guys, I played Legacy this week.
Woo. Yeah. How was it?
So you were in heaven.
I am in heaven. No, so locally, and I'll just give him a shout out because I did tweet out that, you know, I played on their stream. The shop in Kansas City called Spanky's, they do a once a month Legacy tournament. And my big hiccup with going there is it's all proxied. right? Everything's allowed. Obviously, I have a legacy deck. Right. But
I'm sorry. It's 100% proxy. It's not 10-card proxy or...
It's you can have a 100% proxy deck if you so choose.
I didn't realize that.
Gross. Right. Okay. And it's, you know, it's on a Wednesday. So just because of my work schedule, sometimes I just can't go. So this is the first opportunity I've had to go. It's about 40-minute drive from my house too. So it's a little bit of a haul for a middle of the week tournament, but I can make it work because of the holiday and all that stuff. So I decided to go. And obviously I've been tuning my Maverick list for Star City Games, Kansas City. And I've been talking about that. And it's very, very interesting. So first of all, I was really impressed with the shop and how they ran things. You know, even before you sit down to the tournament, they tell you, look, all your proxies have to be full color. You can proxy the whole deck. This is the buy-in. This is why, et cetera. So, you know, everybody's on the same page regarding that kind of thing. There were 19 players. And the shop, and I don't know why more shops don't do this. They have a stream. It's not something where they commentate or anything like that. They just set up the cameras and the streaming, the broadcast, and you can watch it on Twitch, right? And they have a Twitch channel. And, you know, that's kind of the feature match. So if you're the top two ranked players, you end up at that table, right?
Sure.
But what's interesting about the culture of a legacy tournament where everybody can proxy is before I was playing in a tournament structure where there were no proxies allowed and we had 8 to 10 people. And, you know, there was a guy that showed up with Show and Tell every week and he really knew that deck because he played with it for a year.
Sure.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I played with Maverick for, you know, however long at that point. There were other guys that had played Dredge for years or Combo Elves. So there's this really kind of intimate knowledge, whereas if anything can be proxied, kind of things that become the deck du jour, you see a lot more. So there were 19 people. There were at least two infect decks there.
Crazy. Yeah.
Which is just not something you see. It's become real popular on the Star City Game circuit, so a lot of people just put it together and showed up with it, right?
Yeah.
Right.
And it's also weird whenever you see proxies for cards that, like Delver of Secrets or something, that are a common that you can get for 50 cents.
Yeah.
But I digress. What's really nice is the fact that everybody gets a chance to play, right? Round one, I played against Infect, got that in three. Then I played against Jund, Dredge, and then I played on stream against Shardless Bug, which I tell Cameron about this, and then he's like, hey, I just have to ask you. I noticed that you had a pretty good time. Like, it seemed like a good matchup for Maverick against Shardless Bug. Did your opponent, was he just a noob, or did he not know what he was doing? Like, he didn't want to give me any credit at all.
No, none whatsoever. I mean, why would I do that?
Maybe he thought your name was Cameron.
Right.
It's like, what was your opponent? Like eight? I mean,
yeah. He's like, why are you winning? This never happens.
Well, anyway, so round five after the Shardless Bug match, you know, I ID and then I win against Slivers in the semifinal or quarterfinals.
Okay.
And
yeah,
that was also on camera. And you know, it's kind of unusual. So first of all, I've never watched myself play on camera. I've recorded myself on Modo before, but never actual live Magic. And that I went back and watched the next morning. It's a little bit awkward, especially when you make a game state error and you don't catch something. For example, I tapped two mana and put in to play a Gaddick Teague that I shouldn't have had the mana for on accident. Right. And so like looking back on that moment, I thought, oh man, I made the sickest read. I thought my opponent had Abrupt Decay and he did. And so I equipped a Noble Hierarch, blah, blah, blah. And then I look back at the video and I'm like, oh wow, I shouldn't have been able to do that. You know what I mean? So that was awkward, but I was generally happy with the way I played. That being said, man, I mean, right now the focus is just totally on Legacy. I went and practiced Legacy again today, so I don't know that I'm going to play Standard at Star City Games Kansas City. I'm kind of on the fence, and we'll talk about this later.
Curtis, does that mean you're going to trade with me all day?
I was going to side event, because look, so M15... they're doing $10 side drafts, so I could do four drafts for the price of entry into the Standard tournament. And I know the audience has, let's say, they're a little fatigued with me complaining about Standard all the time. So maybe I just need to take a break, right? Just need to just trial separation from Standard for a little while. Focus on my Limited game, which I never get to do, and I love Limited.
Right. Come back with the cons.
Yeah, with Khan, that would be great, right? So, right. Dustin, what do you think? Do you just need my help trading the whole day? Is that it?
Yeah, why not? It would be fun.
It's not very believable. No, it's not very not believable. At
all. You act like it's work.
It's not. It's actually very interesting, right? Cameron, what do you think I should do, man?
Side events, Ben. I mean, yeah, I don't want to hear another Curtis tirade into Standard. So I don't know. I'm kind of interested to see what your side event experience would be for something like that, just because it was so kind of negative at St. Louis because it was just so crowded and you couldn't really get side events to go off, right? Because there are just like four tables and 30 people wanting to play.
Right.
Yeah, my experience in St. Louis last time was so negative that I'm not going to go back to play in St. Louis in September. It's right. kind of a yeah. bummer, but I just...
Every time they've been here in Kansas City, though, there's been lots and lots of rooms.
Yeah, like, and like I said...
Excessive amounts.
Whenever I played at Star City St. Louis, when I played... Or I shouldn't say St. Louis. When I played in Kansas City, when I played in Minneapolis, those events were great and really well run and had... It's just, for whatever reason, that St. Louis Convention Center is just not big enough.
Right.
For right. the amount of people yeah. there.
Well, like, two ago wasn't so bad. It was just, like, poorly planned this time. Like, I don't know if they thought that they always get in there and there's never been a problem and didn't notice there was two other events that weekend. You know? Maybe that was it. They just didn't plan ahead.
Yeah, these things happen. Anyway, we got to cut out. We got more spoilers to talk about, so we'll come back after the break and discuss some new cards. And welcome back. So, guys, we have a six planeswalker, right? Dustin, you've been eerily quiet this whole episode.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. Yes, you have.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of, you look a little Garruk-ish today. Garruk-ish, is that what okay. I'll say? Right?
Yeah, I guess think so. Yeah.
So, let's hear it, man. This planeswalker, what's he do?
You give me this card? I don't like this card, but I guess I'll do this. Garruk, Apex Predator. One green, one black, five colorless, loyalty of five. He gets plus one, destroy another planeswalker, plus one, put a 3/3 black beast creature token with death touch onto the battlefield, minus three, destroy, God, I can't talk. Destroy target creature, you gain life equal to its toughness, minus eight, target opponent gets an emblem with whenever a creature attacks you, it gets plus five, and gains trample until end of turn. So, I don't know about you guys, but all I see this as is the like EDH straight up, right? And it's like the biggest hate card, right? Because you pick one guy out of like, what, six or seven at the table, and you give him this emblem, and when anybody attacks him, he's just getting the you know, crap beat out of him, right?
Right.
I don't know. Other than that, his seven casting cost, I just really don't see as being too viable in Standard. Granted, Black has so many good cards coming out, and Mono Black could still be a thing with Nykthos and so on. Being able to destroy another target planeswalker is a big deal. But other than that, I don't know, man. I think his cost is just a little too high.
Yeah, Cameron, what's your thoughts, man?
You know, it's kind of... It seems like they're making a huge push for like planeswalkers. They want you to have a Super Friends deck, right? It seems mm-hmm. that way, but at the same time, there's red. I mean, like, there's just, you know, red white burn out right now, and mm-hmm. that deck is so much faster than you being able to get any of these planeswalkers up online, especially a seven casting cost one. I don't know. I just don't see how you have the speed to stabilize without just getting burnt to the face by turn five or six.
Right. The other thing I don't understand with this is, and maybe there's just something I'm missing, but it's like everybody's buying into the hype as well, because on Star City, this guy's been $30, came out at $30. He's been out of stock three or four times. So, I mean, he's obviously in demand. But again, I'm wondering if it's just the flavor or if there is something I'm missing.
No, dude, you're not missing anything. And but I totally just want to highlight your buying into the hype thing, okay? The entire length of this guy being legal and Standard, presumably, unless he's reprinted in next core set, he will mm-hmm. exist alongside Thoughtseize and Hero's Downfall.
Yeah, right.
And I'm sorry, I'm not looking to make my opponent's late game Thoughtseizes any good. Right? Right. I don't want my opponent to turn six thought sees me and that be a good thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And the problem that, you know, Cameron, you would address with the super friend idea is Kiora's a turn four, sometimes a turn three card, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like the earliest you're going to get this guy out is what, turn five? I mean, it's feasible that it's earlier than that. But then the other kind of thing is, if Standard gets this slow and ramp becomes this big of a thing, why wouldn't I just play in Garrick's Wake instead?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because that is, I mean, it's essentially an ultimate, right? Planeswalker ability. You're wiping out all their cards and, you know, taking control of the game from there. So I've heard, and I'm not kidding you, people compare this guy to Jace the Mind Sculptor. I just can't emphasize.
No.
Well, there are four. How? There are four options, right? So it's exactly like Jace.
Right. Yeah. And they're both planeswalkers, just like Jace, right?
Like, and again, I get it. But the problem is, here's a scenario. So let's say, Cameron, we're playing a standard match and you have a Kiora, right? Yep. That you've played way later than maybe you should have, because presumably I'm playing this Garrick early enough to kill it and it matters, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've bubbled guys, you've drawn cards, but let's say I do this and I activate the kill a planeswalker ability, right? And then you go in step, Hero's Downfall. So I've just spent seven mana for a Hero's Downfall, and you spent three mana for a Hero's Downfall. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But your seven mana Hero's Downfall next turn can still do something.
Presumably. Right?
Right.
But the other big problem is, if you are way behind on board, it does not catch you up.
No.
Right.
So, you know, whereas the current Garrick in the current core set, he can, you know, get you out of a jam big time with that draw cards ability. Right?
Right.
The lead the stampede ability. So I'm, we'll say, very negative. Very negative on this.
Well, why wouldn't you just, like, have Liliana Vess instead anyway, right?
Right. And again, in a slow standard, Liliana Vess is very powerful. Being able to tutor up a card, it's pretty good, guys.
Yeah.
Right. Not to mention forcing them to discard cards, plus you got Thoughtseize, right? I mean, I don't know.
I mean, obviously, context matters. Maybe there's some kind of environment where this guy's good, but I don't know. So, Cameron.
There is an environment. It's called EDH. And, Curtis, one day you'll play it.
I mean, it's theoretically possible that I'll play multiplayer Magic again someday, but I don't see that day coming anytime soon. Cameron, what card would you like to talk about next?
Spirit Bonds. It is a casting cost of one and a white. It's an enchantment. Whenever a non-token creature enters the battlefield under your control, you may pay one white. If you do, put a 1/1 white spirit creature token with flying onto the battlefield. Then it has pay one and a white. Sacrifice a spirit. Target non-spirit creature gains indestructible until end of turn. So, yeah, I think this is a good card in the white weenie deck right now. I mean, just it's another good option for Brave the Elements. It seems like it just kind of is a logical choice to put in that deck.
That's a bit interesting. I like this card, but I find it just being a little slow. The reason I say this is, what was the Return to Ravnica thing that we had where you could pay a black or a white and they lost a life, you gained a life?
Extort.
Extort, there you go. Extort was a very cheap cost too, and there was other cards that had it that could help you activate it. And it never caught on. It had a lot of hype, but a lot of times, especially early in the game, you just don't have that extra mana, right? And as you said, with Brave to Elements floating, is that not good enough right now? I mean, do you need two ways? Hard to say.
Yeah, and I'm really interested to see in what way a white creature deck breaks, because last week we talked about white devotion, which would presumably be like, you know, more mid-rangey, play Heliod, play Spear, you know, that kind of thing, play the Soul of Theros, whereas Spirit Bond seems like it fits more in the kind of launch the fleet. Maybe it's a heroic deck, maybe not, but, you know, something that, you know, is very, very small, efficient creatures that is more of a swarm strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know if that's going to be good enough to really move forward. There has been a heroic deck in Standard that, you know, I would assume either kills very quickly or dies very quickly.
Yep, right.
But maybe this will play a role in that to kind of give it some legs, make it a little bit better if you don't have the, quote, you know, high-end draw where you're just, like, going off.
Right.
Yeah, but I like it. I like it. I just, you know, I'm not going to read Court of Calling because my assumption is that a lot of players know what that card is and does. Right. So Court of Calling is a really, really interesting reprint. Okay. And I saw this, and I don't know if you guys remember, but a few weeks ago I was complaining that the way that decks are getting constructed, when there's no way to build a toolbox for you to go to get certain creatures, that you end up right. with four of everything, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now with Court of Calling, green decks have a lot more diversity and ability to build around this card. My suspicion is you're always going to start with four cords, but maybe it's a two or three of.
Right.
And then you're going to play like the elf that blows up an enchantment when it comes into play, right?
Right.
Or you're going to play, you know, one of Polychronos potentially, right? Or mm-hmm. a one of, what's the red-green guy that kills enchantments whenever he attacks? It's the Crusher of some sort. Polish Crusher.
Polish Crusher, right? Yeah.
There you go.
Right, you might play one of him. You might just kind of create this really interesting toolbox. I don't, even though Court of Calling can get non-green creatures, I don't know that you're going to use it much outside of a kind of, you know, green-black or green-red
right.
shell. Yeah. But what's also interesting is, you know, Court of Calling was a pretty expensive modern card.
Right.
That didn't get reprinted in Modern Masters. So it's kind of one that should have been obvious that it was coming at some point.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's exactly what I'm feeling here. I think you're right with the one or two of in Standard, and that's just even maybe on some decks, but I think they reprinted it because they forgot to in Modern Masters.
I think we're set. Oh, no, we forgot. Yeah,
it's like, oh, missed one.
Come on, Carl, you have one job. No. Yeah. you know, I'm sure that they're, you know, in their minds, Court of Calling is a fixed green Sun Zenith. Right, because it costs more. Mm-hmm. There's some things it obviously does, you know, a little bit better. You know, that's an argument for a different time and place.
Right.
But I think it's going to make a huge impact on Standard. And you're going to see it a lot.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see if it goes outside of that green, black, green, red. But it's looking like both of those decks are going to be very much a thing. Right?
Right.
So, Dustin, our next card is Scuttling Doom Engine.
All right, Scuttling Doom Engine, 6 colorless for a 6/6 artifact creature. Scuttling Doom Engine can't be blocked by creatures with power 2 or less. When it dies, it deals 6 damage to target opponent. I like this card. I mean, it's not by any means like the greatest card ever, but it's just even, you know, 6 for a 6/6, and then when he dies, it does another 6. This guy's going to be late game. You can throw him in red. If he ends up dying, or, you know, you got Shrapnel Blast anyway, right? Let's do 11 damage to somebody.
Right.
You know, it's just ridiculous for red. So.
Right. I think he actually gives creature decks kind of a nice late game against Elspeth, right? Because.
Absolutely.
Right now, the way Standard's configured, if you're playing against an aggro deck and you have play Elspeth, it's like, good luck, right?
Right.
She is such a lock that this thing actually offers, you know, an aggro deck some sort of protection. And I don't know if he's going to be a sideboard guy that just kind of replaces Rurik Thar, you know, in that spot.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But the potential does exist for him to actually see main deck play. 6 damage, you know, is a lot.
Right.
Cameron, what do you think, man?
Yeah, I mean, just like even being able to redirect that 6 damage back to Elspeth in case, or for whatever reason, I mean, I don't know. There's just a lot of opportunity where this card is definitely like just a nice safe bet to put into your sideboard.
Also, with his first ability of small creatures can't block him, anybody that's playing like weenie decks, they can't even like double block him, triple block him,
yeah,
anything, right?
Like, I mean, like a white weenie with hero, yeah, like the other cards that we were just talking about, like that's just kind of moot now, right? I mean, there's just no way to deal with it.
Right.
It's kind of like a good answer with like what Jace, Architect of Thought, did with his +1 as well. You know, I mean, like I dealt with so many problems with all my 1/1 tokens when I was playing the Devotion deck against a Jace, right, that this is kind of in the same vein in that way too.
So agree with all those points, Cameron. I want to just mention one thing. This isn't necessarily, again, it's a reprint, is the return of Dissipate and what that signals. Okay, there's been a lot of chatter online about, you know, people are like, oh, it's so exciting. And look, there is no one that likes playing with old school Dissipate more than me, right?
Is it because the new picture reminds you of Tigers in the Wild are disappearing and we need to fix that? Is that what it is?
No. No. Dustin, I always play with old border.
I know. I'm just
blue whatever. Cards. Man. I'm hurt by that accusation, by the way. No, dude, busting out that Richard Kane Ferguson art. You know what I'm talking about? Like,
we need to bring him back. He needs to just start doing art again.
No kidding. But anyway, but
not that he doesn't. He needs to do more match card. We'll say that.
Yeah, Richard, if you're out there, we need you, buddy. But there's been a lot of talk about this versus Dissipate. Look,
you mean Dissolve?
Yeah, versus Dissolve. Thank you.
There we go. Dissipate versus Dissipate is just good Dissipate.
Yeah, right. and you should be playing with the Mirage copy, right? That's just right. How it goes. But look, the Dissolve, ability to scry makes it almost always better than Dissipate, right? It's just almost always you're getting a half a spell along with countering something. Mm-hmm, and it is just, you know, that's the counter spell you need to focus on if you're a control player, right? The situations where Dissipate matters, I mean, they do come up, but it's more likely that you'll play, you know, four Dissolve and then a Dissipate in the upcoming standard season, rather than much of anything else, right? Anyway, Dustin, were there some cards like you liked in terms of the financial end, like picking up at the pre-release or unloading at the pre-release?
Well, hang on here. So speaking of reprints, I think it's neat that Back to Nature is coming back, being as there's so many enchantments and stuff in Theros block, including enchantment creatures, and it just wipes the board, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's actually pretty decent against the red deck. Like if you can kill multiple Eidolons, that's sweet.
Yeah, that's good.
Right. And I believe Back to Nature is an instant too, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, it's just huge. Mm-hmm. So the other card I want to talk about is a blue card called Polymorphous Jest. And I find it really interesting. It's 2 blue, 1 colorless. It's an instant. Until end of turn, each creature target player controls loses all abilities and becomes a blue frog with base power and toughness 1/1. The reason I like this card is its casting cost is not outrageous. And I see this being played in like a blue-white weenie type thing. You might even have a Farah come back. She was played a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they won't necessarily know when it's going to happen because in those type of decks, you attack, you attack, you attack, and eventually they're going to start blocking your guys, you know, Stormbreath Dragons, Polychronos, whatever, and then poof, right?
Yeah, there's actually been a lot of, what's the word I'm looking for, searching for the next Wrath. You know, we talked about it a little bit last week. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no Day of Judgment or Supreme Verdict-like effect in this or Theros block.
Right.
I still believe Anger of the Gods is going to be the go-to answer. But let's not forget about Drowned in Sorrow, right? You know, if you're kind of a control-ish deck, you can get a lot of mileage out of that card. But yeah, there's also been a lot of talk around another blue card that's Wrath-like called Aether Spouts, which is, you know, 3 blue-blue for an instant where every creature that's attacking you puts its owner on top or on bottom of his or her library.
Right.
And so I don't know if inside WotC they're trying to fix Wrath or fix what they're doing. Aether Spout seems really not like something I want to do with my life.
Right. it just seems really costly to me. And it's each attacking creature. So if they have something that's important with activated abilities or something, it's not necessarily attacking and it's still going to be a problem for you.
Yeah. Yeah, and like, I don't know. I mean, granted, it can be a one-sided Wrath, so there is that, right?
True.
So, you know, we'll see. But I just wanted to talk to you about the pre-release, because I always view the pre-release as a good opportunity to, you know, take whatever cards I open, or maybe if I win some cards, and liquidate, right? Because that's when cards tend to be up high. There's a lot of new cards in this core set. So are there any cards that you think are really worth, you know, holding on to or letting go?
So, in the realm of liquidating right now, I think unless you're playing with them, pretty much all the planeswalkers that you open, move them as fast as possible. The pain lands are kind of in this spot where they're not really expensive anyway, so save them, get your play sets. That being said, every time that new sets come out, decks change, so pain lands will go up and down in value, which is unfortunate being as a reprints and not great lands in my eyes.
Right.
That being said, stuff to keep an eye on for like the long term, like I would trade into as many Hushwing Griffs as I could find. And, you know, I just start sitting on them. Urborg, I'd probably start getting into those. Yes, it might go down a little bit more from where it's at, but I see in the long term it going back up. Court of Calling, I don't see that happening with as much as Urborg.
Right. And by the way, like, Birthing Pod is, like, kind of unofficially on the watch list for being banned, right? So, like,
right.
If Birthing Pod goes away, that really hurts Court of Calling's playability.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then two other cards, which one people are probably already looking at, would be Sliver Hive Lord, because all the Lord Slivers end up being worth something, and his ability is pretty big. But the other one is an uncommon, and that's Diffusion Sliver, and it might be one of those uncommons that takes a really long time for it to go up, but its ability is just huge for what it does, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's cheap cost, great ability. It could be one of those uncommons, if not reprinted, that goes up to $7-$8 in 2 years.
Like all the slivers, which, by the way, I didn't realize how popular slivers were with people until I started actually talking to players, and like the five color Sliver Lord or the Sliver Land, they're just over the moon, excited.
Right. Right.
Okay.
I'm not as excited with the Sliver Hive. I mean, yeah, it'll be important in Sliver decks, but I just don't see it being as big of a deal as the Lords, you know, Sliver Queen, Sliver Legion, all this stuff. If you didn't want to run around trying to get Sliver Hives in the future, you could still use Mana Confluence, stuff like that. I mean, yeah, it's hurting you, but slivers work so well when you have enough of them that you're just, you know, winning.
Yeah, man, I'm sorry. I just don't get the appeal of theme decks. You know what theme I want to my deck? Winning. That's what I want the theme to be. Right? Like, indeed, anything else besides that, not really interested, right? Okay, Cameron, we haven't done it in a while. Are you ready to become a spike? All right, so every week, we've missed the last couple weeks because we've been talking spoilers so much.
So almost every week.
Almost every
week. On average.
More than monthly, but not quite weekly, right? we like to kind of work Cameron through some exercises, kind of get him in shape to be the spike that we know he can
right.
be.
It's like brain yoga.
It's yeah. like brain. Yeah. It is like brain yoga. So... To that end, Cameron is wearing yoga pants right now, so that's fantastic.
No, I wish. Yeah.
And
he
here's
is
what happened:
in downward facing dog with a microphone right in front of his face. Just saying. I mean, we got to set the mood.
I don't know how I can read this now.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this actually happened to me, right? And I thought it was such a difficult decision. And it also illustrates what's so great about Legacy, right?
Okay.
Because this is a turn to play. Okay?
Okay.
I am playing Maverick. Surprise, surprise.
Mm-hmm.
Right? My opponent is playing Infect. So we're going to put you in the shoes of my opponent, Cameron.
All right. Okay? I'm there. Okay.
So my opponent did like Island Ponder or something like that. Came back to me, and I play Savannah Noble Hierarch.
Okay.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Goes back to him. He says, Swamp Thought Sees You. Okay?
Okay.
Now, here's what's interesting is I Thought Seized him the next turn.
Okay?
I rip a Thought Seize off the top. So, I know what's in his hand. Okay?
Okay.
So, he Thought Seizes me. Here's what is in my hand. You ready for this?
I'm ready.
But keep in mind, on the board, I have a Savannah and a Noble Hierarch.
Okay.
Okay. A Green Sun Zenith.
Okay.
A Humility. A Zealous Persecution.
Okay.
A Verdant Catacombs. and a Swords to Plowshares.
Okay.
His hand at this point in time is a Glistener Elf, a Blighted Agent, Blazing Shoal,
yep,
Progenitus, and a land. I don't remember which land. I just wrote
okay.
Land.
Okay, a land.
So let me ask you this. He thought seized you first.
Right.
So which of those cards that you listed did he take away?
That's the skill test.
That's, oh gosh.
Oh, I see.
So I need help with what humility is and what zealous whatever
so
was.
Humility is an enchantment that turns all creatures into 1/1s with no abilities.
Okay.
It just turns everybody into 1/1s.
Mm-hmm.
So it strips them of their infectability. Okay. Right. Humility you tend to bring in against, you'll bring it in against tribal decks. It's not great, like elves,
mm-hmm.
but it's really, really good against show and tell. Right? Because right. they're like, show and tell, Immercool, and you're like, oh, humility. Look, you got a 1/1. Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
And then you said Zealous Persecution?
Zealous Persecution is a black and a white. Instant. All your creatures get +1/+1, and all their creatures get -1/-1.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay.
So, you know everything else, right? You know what a Verdant Catacombs is.
Yeah, I know what everything
is,
else is. Yep.
Okay.
So, what do you take?
Well, hang on. One more time. What does Cameron have in his hand?
Glistener Elf, Blighted Agent, Blazing Shoal, Progenitus, and Land.
Okay.
Okay.
I believe it was an on-fetch land, but it was not an Ink Moth Nexus.
Okay. So, what would I take from your hand? I think I would take the Humility. Maybe the Swords.
Dustin, while Cameron's stewing on this, I want to hear your opinion. Because I thought this was legitimately hard. I asked my opponent if I could take a picture of it.
Again, I'm with Cameron on this. Why wouldn't you just take the Humility?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Cameron. Your final answer? Is that your
humility,
final answer?
Humility. Just because, like, if I'm playing Infect, I need to know that my -1/-1 counters are going to actually work.
Right. And by the way, he's roughly one turn away feasibly from the kill, right?
Yeah, right. Because with the Blazing Shoal
blazing
and the Progenitus.
Shoal
and
So he's just got to protect whatever it is that he puts into play.
Right.
Right. I think you can make a very, very strong argument for taking the Zealous Persecution here.
I can understand that too. But I don't know. Humility just seems to be, because humility is an enchantment.
Right.
Right. It's going to stick around. Whereas, he could play one infect guy, leave the other one in his hand, try to do the Blazing Shoal thing. You might kill it with the swords or whatever. And he's got more that he can keep playing. Unless he decides to play them all at once. That'd just be foolish.
Right. He ended up taking the Swords to Plowshares.
Oof. Okay. Not a good
Which
choice.
I don't think is wrong either. Next turn, let's see. I thought seized him and then I put a Gaddock Teague into play. With my green sun zenith, I don't think he really expected. Which, by the way, that happens all the time with Gaddock Teague. I zenith him into play or whatever, and people look at it and they're like, "Wait, he does what?" Right? I actually green sun zenith for Gaddock Teague against Dredge, and the Dredge guy was so confused until he realized it shut off his Dread Return. Right? Whoops.
Right. Well, so the thing with Gaddock Teague is, though, the Gaddock Teague will not turn off the Blazing Shoal, right? Because you can have an alternate cost.
It turns it off. It turns it off. You just cannot play it. If it has X in its cost, no bueno.
Okay. Because it's in its cost. Even though you're not using it, it's still in its cost, so it's shut off.
Right. You can't use Force of Will either, even though it's an alternative cost.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I thought that was a super difficult decision. I think I would have taken the Zealous Persecution just because that seems like a difficult thing. But Swords is the most efficient removal where you guys are right. Humility is the thing that shuts it, like, the whole deck down, basically.
Right.
I guess he could assemble the combo twice, right?
Mm-hmm.
To kill me, but that seems pretty brutal. Anyway, so I just thought that was a super interesting... And that was turn two in Legacy, guys, right?
Yeah, like, that's fantastic. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it just totally illustrates, and my opponent stewed on it for a long time, but made a great decision. I think Swords is perfectly fine too.
Right.
So let's close down the show because we've been talking so long. Dustin, someone would like to speak with you.
They'll find Dustin with a single red rose at Grand Central Station.
In which city?
New York. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
So fly there and...
Right.
You know, don't say anything. Just go up and hug him because he needs that.
Right. And I love how Cameron didn't give a date. So they just have to guess on which day I'll be
there. You're there every night.
Every night at 6 p.m. Yeah.
Right. Just waiting.
Anyway, Cameron, if someone would like to get a hold of you,
Twitter at Cameron _ McCoy.
And I am at Curtis Now. Our official show feed is at Spikefeed MTG. You can listen to our show on mtgcast.com, brainstormbrewery.com, or our own website, spikefeed.com. We will check you guys next week.
Scuttling, huh?